from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Ed Lee is in. Last night, San Francisco's interim mayor told the San Francisco Chronicle that he changed his mind and would run for a full term as mayor. That announcement will become official moments from now when he pays a visit to the city's Department of Elections. It was just 7 months ago that Lee was appointed mayor by the city's Board of Supervisors, an appointment he got in part because he pledged he would not run for election. In the hour ahead, we'll focus on what the Lee announcement means for the city and for the not-too-happy candidates he'll face in November. Ed Lee and the race for mayor, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson in This Morning for Michael Krasny. The race for mayor in San Francisco just got a whole lot more interesting. At this hour, Interim Mayor Ed Lee is paying a visit to the city's Department of Elections to make it official. He's running for a full term as mayor after all. Quite a turnabout from the day 7 months ago when the city's Board of Supervisors picked the then little-known city administrator to fill out the term of Gavin Newsom. Lee pledged at the time that he would not be a candidate for a full term as mayor, a pledge that was crucial to many of the supervisors who appointed him, including several who wanted to run for mayor themselves. Here's what Ed Lee said about his future plans when he was Michael Krasny's guest on Forum last February.
During this year, I'm not a politician. I'm not looking for any other office.
You will not run again.
I will not run again.
That was then, and this is now. Joining us to talk about the newly upside-down race for mayor, Rachel Gordon, City Hall reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, whose paper broke the story last night. Rachel, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Happy to have you join us. Joining us, too, is Corey Cook. He's assistant professor of politics and director of the Leo McCarthy Center for Public Service and the Common Good at the University of San Francisco. Corey Cook, good morning as well.
Good morning to you.
So this reminds me a bit of an old cereal commercial. So let me explain. Do you remember the one where there's a little boy named Mikey eating a bowl of cereal, and he's eating it, and everyone's looking at him concerned, and everyone suddenly says, he likes it, he likes it, Mikey likes it. Did Ed Lee just decide, Rachel Gordon, that he likes being mayor?
I think he certainly has grown into the role. Anyone who's followed him has seen that, where he had a couple of sentences when he went to public appearances, suddenly turned into what sounded like campaign speeches when you look back at it. He got much more comfortable in the role. And I think more than Ed Lee getting comfortable in the role, I think a lot of people outside of City Hall liked what they saw. The business community, some labor groups liked it, neighborhood groups liked it. He really took drama out of City Hall after 7 years of Gavin Newsom, 8 years of Willie Brown. He really was a different kind of mayor who came into the role. But he quickly turned, as you said this morning, from a citizen mayor, even though he's a longtime city administrator, to a political mayor. And that's going to turn everything upside down, as you said.
And how much, Corey Cook, does the fact that he was a different kind of mayor these past 7 months, how connected was that to his pledge of not being mayor? In other words, how much of this is Ed Lee the person and how much of it was Ed Lee the pledge?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, it's certainly his relationship with the Board of Supervisors, which is partly what people liked, was that the tone of the Board of Supervisors had changed also was a result of them being able to work with this mayor who, you know, had pledged to be non-political. So if you look at the deal over the budget, I mean, we have a unanimously enacted budget. You had a deal that was cut on pension reform. Part of those were so consensual a process because the mayor who was directing that was not seeking to run again. And so I think part of what people liked was that, you know, he was just going to come in, he was going to, you know, not care about politics and do things for 9 months and then, you know, turn it over to somebody else.
Put that in a little context for us in terms of not only the comparison to Gavin Newsom, but many mayors past. I mean, how unusual is it for that sort of consensual process to take place at City Hall?
Well, in San Francisco, I mean, Rachel would know better than I would, but in San Francisco, that's enormously unusual. But I think, I think this is an interesting dynamic. I think, you know, there's one thing about, you know, you'll hear a lot in the next couple of days about, you know, whether how voters will react to him and whether, you know, he broke his promise with voters that he wouldn't run. Frankly, that happens all the time. I don't think that's really much of an issue with voters. I mean, Gavin Newsom said he wasn't going to run for lieutenant governor. Obama said he wasn't going to run for president. So I think voters are used to quote-unquote politicians breaking their word. I think what's different in this situation is that what voters like about him is that he isn't a politician.
Yeah.
And so the last month or so when he changed the language from, I will not run for mayor to I'm not looking at it at this time to their conversations about the future to today, I think struck people more like what sort of typical politicians do. But the bigger issue, frankly, is how he relates to the Board of Supervisors, because not only did his appointment rest on the pledge that he wouldn't run, but also he extracted, an enormously important benefit, which was the city then changes ethics laws to say you can have your old job back. Mm. And so this is a pretty public deal that was cut between the Board of Supervisors and the mayor. And so I think what you're going to see in the next few months is a very different environment in City Hall, where suddenly everything that he does will be viewed through a much more political lens. And I think his job depends on being able to be trusted by those he works with, and that includes the city attorney who represents the city in lawsuits, and
also a candidate,
candidate for mayor, the president of the Board of Supervisors, also
a candidate
for mayor. So I think it's going to be this is sort of that was Edley 1.0, this is Edley 2.0.
We also though have to look at the timing of this, because the Board of Supervisors just went on its summer break. So they're going to be out of City Hall for the next few weeks, so there's not going to be any real legitimate official business that they have to take care of, where it's going to be the mayor versus the Board of Supervisors. They just got through the contentious budget battle, as you mentioned, which wasn't contentious, but that normally is. So they didn't have to worry about that anymore. The pension reform, which was the other big issue going before San Francisco voters and at City Hall over the last couple of months, that's wrapped up, although they've got two races or two competing ballot measures right now, public defender Jeff Adachi's and then the mayor and the Board of Supervisors pension measure. But they're in lockstep on that. So in many ways, they've erased what might be the most contentious issues, and then it can come down to, was he a liar? Does he have integrity? What kind of City Hall do we want? And we have to also look at, as you mentioned, Board of Supervisors President David Chu, who has really been in lockstep with Ed Lee in terms of changing the tone at City Hall. David Chu has been hammered by his traditional base on the left of saying, look, you've sold out, you've gone center, you've gone moderate, you've worked with the mayor's office. And David Chu has said very strongly, I want this to be a different kind of tenor, a different kind of political dynamic at City Hall. So he's running as well, but he's got that. We also don't have Chris Daley on the Board of Supervisors anymore, nor Gavin Newsom at City Hall. And they went after each other with glee, really. That was part of what their political DNA was. So that's out of the equation.
So in some ways, part of this is the changing tenor overall of the personalities within City Hall. No Chris Daley, no Gavin Newsom, no Aaron Peskin. I mean, some of the more polarizing forces under the rotunda aren't there anymore. Do you agree with Corey Cook, Rachel, that the question of he changed his mind, now he's just another politician, won't be a big deal to voters?
I think that Corey was right. I think the public, and this is just my opinion, the public expects politicians to lie because they do. We've seen that time and time again. Is it going to be more than a blip at the beginning of the campaign? I might question whether it is. It's really Ed Lee made the promise to other politicians that he was going to run, even though he said it publicly many times he wasn't going to run. But I think the public might look to see, boy, what's happened at City Hall? Do we have dirty streets? Is Muni running on time? Are we paying more parking fines? What's the job situation like in San Francisco? I think they're going to pay much more attention to the nuts and bolts issue. Is this the guy who can run the city for the next 4 years? That's where I think they're going to concentrate.
And is that the campaign pitch, Corey Cook, that you think Ed Lee will make? I'm the guy who can make things work.
Sure, which is also this campaign piece, I think, of Dennis Herrera and David Chu and others. I think Rachel's exactly right, which is the space that he's occupying in this race is the space that others were occupying. That the changing tenor at City Hall was in part what they were working on as well. And so Dennis Herrera's campaign motto is "Imagine a city that works," and I think that will now be exactly the same motto that the mayor has. I think that's what people are looking for is to solve those sort of quality of life issues.
Now Ed Lee though is in a difficult position right now, because before when he was interim mayor with no sights on higher office, he really was kind of the placeholder. He inherited Gavin Newsom's City Hall, whether it was the good things or the bad things. He was trying to, what he kind of called, stabilizing it to get it ready for the next mayor. Now it's going to be on his watch where he's going to get blamed or praised for things. If there's a Muni meltdown again, it's going to be Ed Lee's problem.
Ed Lee's Muni.
Yeah. And if there's something that happens with the police department now, it's going to be, and his police chief, it's going to be Ed Lee's problem, where he didn't really, he got a free pass in many ways on that. That as a reporter, we went to the department heads more to get reaction to something instead of the mayor. But now it's going to be on him.
And does that also, Rachel Gordon, at the Chronicle, change your role and those of other reporters? Will Ed Lee be subject to a different kind of reporting now because he's in it for the whole run?
Right. Absolutely, he will be. And in fact, it has been for the last month or so that there's been a lot more scrutiny of him. And one of the difficulties in this campaign, we have the instant runoff voting with no runoff race between the top two vote-getters, is that there are, 34, 36 candidates running for mayor, 9 real serious contenders in the race. It's hard to put a lot of scrutiny on one person, but just because the mayor is the mayor, he's going to be having public events daily. He's going to be having he's going to have policy. It's his staff that you can scrutinize. He's going to get a lot more eyes and ears on him than he did before.
To some extent, to the Board of Supervisors candidates, John Avalos and David Chu, the two current members of the board who are also running for mayor, have a bit of a dilemma, Corey Cook, in that they can't really just say, well, he's a politician now, and so therefore everything's going to change, because in a way that also says, well, the only way we got along before is when we weren't being politicians. So they're sort of invested already in things being different, aren't they?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a little bit different for David Chu than it's for John Avalos. Avalos opposed the appointment initially, and I think frankly he's one of the few who's actually helped by the announcement because I think he is a pretty strong cohesive voting bloc going into the election that and this sort of muddies the waters in the middle. And I think Avalos is able to sort of stand aside from that. But I think for David Chu, certainly this makes it more difficult because he's been next to the mayor from the outset on all these negotiations, on all the deals that were cut. I mean, he's been standing next to him. And so, I mean, I saw a clip last night talking about how the mayor was going to announce, and in the clip that was you, standing next to him was David Chu.
Yeah.
So I think it does make that very difficult for him.
We hope to hear, by the way, from David Chu, the president of the Board of Supervisors, a little bit later in this program. Let's spend a moment, though, going through who this affects and how this affects. It obviously turns the race in lots of different ways. But let's begin by talking about some of the people who are running. You've both mentioned City Attorney Dennis Herrera, who has positioned himself, as you were saying, the guy who can make the city work. How will this affect his candidacy in particular, Rachel Gordon?
Well, they could get into some of the same base. I mean, Dennis Herrera runs, if not the largest law office in San Francisco, one of the largest law offices. So he can go in as a manager, someone who's been around City Hall for a while. He started out as a commissioner, and then he became city attorney. He also has some backing in the business community that will probably tap Ed Lee and Dennis Herrera will probably tap into some of that. Dennis Herrera probably has a stronger presence, though, in the gay community just because of his advocacy for same-sex marriage. Ed Lee still has to kind of get a foothold there, although he's a civil rights attorney. That hasn't been one of his strongest bases at this point, although we're going to see his campaign, I'm sure, try to shore that up quite a bit because it's a really powerful constituency in San Francisco. That's where I'd see it might affect Dennis Herrera. I guess ranked choice voting, though, as you're saying, Corey, as well, it's like that kind of throws things up in the air. We aren't really sure how it's going to land.
I want to hold on getting into the ranked choice voting conundrum for a moment. And we saw how dramatically, of course, that affected the mayoral race across the bay in Oakland. But let's walk through some of the candidates and then we'll talk through sort of how it might affect ranked choice. What about Senator Leland Yee, who brings with him a powerful constituency, a lot of signatures, as we saw when he unveiled his candidacy a few weeks back? How will it affect him, Corey Cook?
Well, I mean, I think to jump back, I think the announcement today is going to be very interesting, in part because I think, frankly, Ed Lee has a lot of explaining to do. And one of the narratives that has sprung up in the absence of the mayor saying explicitly why he was considering running was one around Leland Yee. And that, frankly, what is reflected here was a desire by Rose Pack and others to draft a candidate to beat Leland Yee. And so I think in some ways they you know, obviously both Chinese Americans who have an ability to mobilize the Chinese community, but at the same time very different constituencies. I mean, from the downtown Chinatown community versus the sort of the outer neighborhoods.
Let's pull back for those who aren't familiar with the role of Rose Pak in particular, and the whole, we'll get into as well, the whole group, the Progress for All group that was encouraging Ed Lee to run. Give us, either of you, a kind of Rose Pak 101.
So Rose Pak is a Chinatown political powerhouse, is how we like to describe her. She really is a go-to person for politicians, or a lot of politicians in San Francisco, if you want to get not necessarily the West Side Asian vote, but the more, I guess, deep-seated Chinatown community, the Chinatown Community Development Center, and some of the nonprofits in Chinatown. She can mobilize voters. She can get money. She's also been very controversial over the years. She's very closely tied to former Mayor Willie Brown. Both of them are the ones who really helped orchestrate getting Ed Lee the job as interim mayor in the first place. And Rose Pak has made it very clear that she wants Ed Lee to run, and she helped do spearhead, I guess, behind the scenes, because she said she didn't do it up front, but the Run, Ed, Run kind of insurgent campaign, rallying both money and forces to get signatures from voters and to have rallies and such. So Rose Pak is a very powerful force here. She does not like Leland Yee. She hasn't liked him for a while, and Corey hit it right on the nail, right on the head, when he said that she was looking for someone, a candidate, who can stop Leland Yee from becoming mayor.
So how much of this does reflect a sort of split or division within the Chinese American community? Because David Chu, obviously, is a part of that as well, Corey Cook. How does that all wind up lining up, and how does that get subdivided, I guess?
Well, we're going to see. I think, you know, obviously there's a pretty sizable split here. I mean, the Chinese community as a voting bloc has been a significant one in San Francisco. I mean, there's evidence, if you look at the ranked choice ballot, for example, you see pretty strong evidence of identity voting, where Chinese voters are voting for some combination of all the Chinese candidates. And the assumption was in this race was with three Chinese American candidates that in some combination those three candidates would appear on a lot of ballots. Well, now you have a fourth. And so how that divides up and whether you see this, the Chinatown versus the outer neighborhoods, or how that breaks down, I think remains to be seen.
But right. The fourth candidate is city assessor Phil Ting.
Phil Ting. Right. And so how that – now that I think that's really one of the driving questions. The Chinese electorate is about 20% of the voting population in San Francisco, and that's very much a critical voting bloc.
Well, we're joined now by the – President of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors and Supervisor for District 3, David Chu, and also a candidate, of course, for Mayor of San Francisco. Mr. Chu, thanks for joining into our program.
Sure. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Give us your reaction to Ed Lee's decision to run.
Today, there are many San Franciscans who are disappointed that Ed broke his promise. For many months, Ed Lee told San Franciscans one thing, but it's clear now that he's going to do just the opposite.
And given that change, where does that place you? Because you've worked shoulder to shoulder with the mayor over the past 7 months. Is it difficult for you to differentiate yourself from the mayor despite that change in his promise, given how closely you've worked with him?
Well, I am very proud of all the things that we have been able to do at City Hall together in the last 7 months. And I do think things have changed for the better since the beginning of the year. That being said, it will certainly be harder for my colleagues and I think for San Franciscans to take Ed at his word moving forward.
I guess my question in part, though, of Supervisor Chu, is that if you worked together successfully before, how do you make the argument that you no longer can just because he's also in the race?
I think it is difficult because we had all been taking him at his word for many, many months. For him to break his promise will certainly have an impact on our working relationship moving forward about what we're able to trust in what he says on the issues that we work on.
You called him this morning, welcoming him into the race. You're going to be debating with him tonight at the Castro in San Francisco. What if you are given the chance to ask the mayor a question during the debate this evening, what would you pose to him?
I think I would ask him how it was after 6 months of telling San Franciscans one thing, how he could do exactly the opposite and break his promise.
And from your standpoint now, what's the argument that you will try to make as to why you, David Hsu, president of the Board of Supervisors, will make a better mayor than Ed Lee, the person you've worked with closely over the last 6 months?
You know, in recent years, as president of the Board of Supervisors, I have led fights to reform our budget process, to pass tough ethics legislation, to keep companies like Twitter and Zynga and Yelp in San Francisco, negotiate agreements that will be bringing in thousands of affordable housing units and new life to make neighborhoods across the city. And we have wonderful proposals on how we are going to be creating jobs, building a world-class education system, and improving our urban landscape. These are all things that we look forward to discussing with San Franciscans and asking and making the case for their trust, their confidence, and their vote.
And lastly, you're in the race for keeps, right? The decision by the interim mayor to now jump into the race doesn't affect your decision to stay in the race at all?
Absolutely not. I am incredibly honored and humbled that thousands of San Franciscans have put in so much time and energy and resources into this campaign. Our volunteers, the reason why we collected the most signatures to qualify myself for the ballot, and that have helped us to raise the most money of any candidate in the race this year. We are in this race to the end.
David Hsu, president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, supervisor for District 3, and a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. Mr. Hsu, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks.
Rachel Gordon and Corey Cook, reactions to what David Hsu had to say and how this will affect his candidacy.
I think that there are a couple of words that David Hsu used that you're going to see him using a lot on the campaign trail and probably other candidates as well, and that was the word trust and the word confidence. And they're going to say that they're someone who you can trust and someone you can have confidence in, and whether they go directly against Ed Lee or whether they just infer that he broke the trust and he broke the confidence by changing his mind, I think that's going to be a common theme we see on the campaign trail. Whether that resonates with voters, we'll have to see.
I think that's exactly right. I think as I said earlier, I think the central challenge for Ed Lee now is that not that he can convince voters that they should forgive him, but that he can actually continue this era of good feelings in San Francisco now that he's in the race, that will go on. I think how the other candidates react to him will be essential in terms of the outcome of the election.
But interesting in a way that I didn't hear at least David Hsu say anything about the way in which he has a different stand on different issues than Ed Lee does. He's differentiating on the question of trust, as you suggest, Rachel, but he's not saying Ed Lee will do this, but I'll do that.
Right. And that's exactly right. And it would be hard at this point for David Hsu to say that because they have been in lockstep. Every press conference, it seems, and neighborhood meetings, major announcements about policy, they've been standing together.
So if Ed Lee's announcement makes things more difficult for both Leland Yee and David Hsu, who does Ed Lee's announcement potentially help? What about John Avalos, the other member of the Board of Supervisors who is running for mayor, Corey Cook?
Well, I think Avalos has helped. I think maybe that's it.
why has Avalos helped?
Well, again, I think he has. I would add Dennis Herrera to the list as well of somebody who I think the argument he's made to voters, it's not going to be differentiation by issues largely. I mean, it really is going to be Herrera's argument's going to be that I run essentially the office that's closest to that of mayor. He's worked effectively with the Board of Supervisors, with the mayor having to defend the city's position on a range of issues. And so he's going to run as an effective manager as well. I think the issues that divide them are going to be fairly narrow ones. And so I think between David Hsu and Dennis Herrera and Ed Lee, you're going to have a lot of commonality, and this issue of trust is going to be central. I think, to me, the ranked choice balloting it now becomes front and center in terms of how this thing sorts itself out, because getting second and third place votes is now going to, I think, determine who. I think that was the case before, but now that just gets so much more complicated in terms of how these the candidates had been spending the last, in some cases, a year carving out space on the ideological spectrum. That's all been disrupted today.
We have to take a short break, but when we come back, we will dive into that complicated question of ranked choice voting, and how Ed Lee's decision today to join the mayoral race will impact that question. We'd like to have you join us as well. You can join us at 866-733-6786. What do you think of Ed Lee's decision? Are you glad he's running? Are you concerned about whether or not he has indeed broken his word and whether or not that would affect your vote? 866-733-6786. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson in this morning for Michael Krasny. Our focus this hour, the decision by Interim Mayor Ed Lee to join the race. He announced just a little while ago that he would indeed become a candidate for mayor. Our guests to talk about the consequence of that decision, Rachel Gordon, City Hall reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Corey Cook, assistant professor of politics and director of the Leo McCarthy Center for Public Service and the Common Good at the University of San Francisco. We welcome your calls as well. What do you think of this? Does it bother you that Ed Lee has changed his mind about running for mayor? What's your take on this decision and how it impacts the race for mayor in San Francisco? You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add your comments online, and we'll try to get them into our conversation. Let's go first to Phil, who joins us in San Francisco this morning. Phil, go ahead, please.
Yes. I worked in 2000 many hours, many days for the progressive candidates, Jake McGoldrick, Leland Yee, Aaron Peskin, Chris Daley, because we opposed Willie Brown. I call him Willie Clown. So I'm hoping that the voters vote against Ed Lee because he's going to be nothing but a proxy for Willie Clown and Rose Pack. So there's no way in the world would I consider voting for him.
Okay, Phil, thanks for the call. We haven't gotten yet to Willie Brown, and no discussion about mayor of San Francisco is complete without him. We talked a little bit about Rose Pack, but there is also the sort of ghost of Willie Brown hovering all of this as well, right?
Yeah, I think it might be more of a ghost of Willie Brown here. As we said earlier, that Willie Brown was key in trying to get first Ed Lee to be the interim mayor and then his support for Ed Lee to run for mayor. And Phil, the caller, was absolutely right that it was in the 2000 election that it was an anti-Willie Brown platform that the successful candidates ran on, the kind of insurgent Board of Supervisors, Aaron Peskin, Chris Daley, Jake McGoldrick. You could go down the list, and it was really anti-Willie Brown. Now, is this race going to be a race against Willie Brown? They certainly will try doing that, the opponents of Ed Lee. And I think because we've seen Ed Lee be a fairly popular mayor, that the caller used the word proxy. I think that's what we're going to see, is the attacks on Willie Brown and Rose Pack.
So those who are on that side of the progressive side of this debate, if we can call it that, Corey Cook, who will they coalesce around? Is it John Avalos? Is that where those votes sort of centered now?
Well, I think Avalos, and I think
Dennis Herrera,
David Chu to some extent, and Leland Yee to some extent. I mean, Labor seems to be going with Leland Yee, and I think Herrera certainly has captured part of the progressive vote, and I think that you'll see that with David Chu as well. I think, you know, David Chu obviously was elected to succeed Aaron Peskin, and I think quite remarkably was able to be elected to president of the Board of Supervisors by the progressive voting bloc, and then after the last election by the moderates. And so I think, you know, he's still, although, you know, the Bay Guardian and others have been skeptical of him because he's been perceived as being more moderate, I think there's still a lot of progressives who think, you know, this is somebody who's been able to get things done as a progressive. So
we haven't mentioned yet two former members of the Board of Supervisors who are also running, Michaela Alioto-Peer and Bevan Dufty. How do they sort through this, Rachel, as Ed Lee becomes an active candidate?
Well, it's interesting. There was a new poll out that my colleagues Matiran Ross reported on this morning showing that Bevan Dufty and Michaela Alioto-Peer are kind of ahead in the race if you look at the polling. And Bevan Dufty is going to be an interesting—
Ahead, not counting Ed Lee?
I think with Ed Lee in the race, wasn't it? Or no, I guess behind, right behind him. Ed Lee first and then those two right after. Bevan Dufty is the only major gay candidate who's running for mayor at this point, and at this time, and he's been kind of interesting because he's been talking very openly about, if I'm not your first choice, make me your second choice. He and Ed Lee share a common denominator, and that's of trying to have people work together and to get government working. Bevan Dufty started out as a Board of Supervisors aide under Susan Leal. When she was a supervisor, he went on to head the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Services and then became a supervisor in his own right before he was termed out. And he has a kind of a good government, we want to make sure your streets are clean, kind of a work ethic there. Michaela Alioto-Peer, former supervisor, has a very famous Alioto name as her grandfather, who was mayor of San Francisco. Her aunt, Angela Alioto, was a supervisor as well. Alioto-Peer has she's one of two women in the major group of candidates running, so she can get some votes that way, probably tapping the women. She comes from District 2, Pacific Heights area. She's very strong and popular in that part of the city, the northern part of the city, and she has strong credentials with downtown interests. She was very pro-jobs, pro-downtown economic growth when she was a member of the Board of Supervisors, so she can probably tap into that as well.
Let's spend a moment, and our apologies. Our phone lines have been down. We'll get them back up again, hopefully, and include more of your calls. But before we do that, Corey Cook, it's now time for ranked choice voting and how that actually works. Give us the sort of rundown, and then we'll talk about how that may play out with individual candidates.
So the rundown is, with ranked choice voting, voters rank their top three choices, and essentially the bottom candidate. Once first place ballots are counted, the bottom candidates' votes are redistributed, and that continues until someone ultimately wins.
So the goal is to not have to spend money on a runoff election.
Exactly. So when it was put into place, there were several arguments that were made. One was it would save money because San Francisco used to have a December runoff. One was that it would lead to more consensus in the election, less negative campaigning. And to some extent, those things have been true. I think what's interesting in this election is that RCV historically hasn't mattered much. And so the conventional wisdom was that ranked choice voting didn't really make much difference in the outcome. There was one race in San Francisco, which was Eric Marr's race, where he actually was in first place and it got closer as the ranked choice ballots were counted. But for the most part in San Francisco, whoever was ahead just won by more. And so ultimately it was the conventional wisdom was you run just like a normal campaign, you get your name out and assume that the second, third choices will sort out in your favor. What changed was in the last election when the Oakland mayoral election switched pretty dramatically, where Don Prada was ahead by 8 or 9 points on election night and ultimately lost. The San Leandro mayoral election switched. The person who was in second ultimately won. You had a race in District 1 in San Francisco where Mark Farrell won when he was in second place. And Malia Cohen, who was in third place after the counting of first place ballots, won in District was at District 10 in San Francisco.
So all kicks in if you don't get an absolute majority. So let's
correct.
Say Ed Lee has 40% of the vote and the other candidates are significantly behind. How does this work then, Rachel Gordon? If you're trailing Ed Lee by 10%, and I'm making this up, if you have most of the number two votes, then you could leapfrog?
Right. Or most of the number two votes, or then if it has to be most of the number three votes, as we mentioned, that happened in District 10 when a lot of, I think there were, 20-something rounds of tabulation before they came to someone clearing that 50% hurdle to win election.
So is anybody running as I want to be number two?
Bevin Dufty definitely has made that key. And I think we're going to see that a lot more when we're going to see it in endorsements a lot. You're going to Democratic clubs and neighborhood groups and special interest groups are going to list their 1, 2, and 3 candidates. So that's where we're going to see it.
We've got a caller who wants to pose a question about ranked choice voting. So, Steve, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My question is, I would like your guests to kind of handicap the race in terms of if someone is a Herrera supporter or a Chu supporter, who is their second choice likely or third choice likely to be? What would their guess be? And also, are the pollsters going to be asking that question of the voters, not only who's your first choice, but are they also going to be asking the people that they poll who's their second choice, who's their third choice?
Steve, thanks. Great question. Professor Cook, put on your political science cap, please. How does this work in polling? Because it's a really interesting question.
Well, polling, the campaigns are polling the ranked choice question. Actually, we're going to do a survey out of our center in the next month that we're going to ask a ranked choice question to get people's first, second, and third, and then basically tabulate that as a ranked choice ballot to get a sense of how it's sorting out. I think the question, to back up to the handicapping, I'm certainly not willing to do that because I have no idea how it'll sort out. But That is ultimately the interesting question. In San Francisco, historically, the challenge is the incumbents have never lost a ranked choice election in San Francisco. And the reason for that is because most people actually vote based on name ID. And so, when they pick an incumbent, what happens is even if you pick people who are polar opposites, they rank each other first and second on about 40% of the ballots. Voters will say, I like the person who is the most progressive and the most conservative first and second because those are the two names I know. So how this sorts out in the mayoral election, something as prominent as this mayoral election in San Francisco, when you have this diversity of candidates, is really hard to decipher. But it went from an open seat runoff election to one that I think now is going to be largely about Ed Lee. And I think that's frankly an indirect choice election to his favor. He'll be on a lot of second place ballots because he's the acting mayor. And so I think for a lot of Dennis Herrera supporters, it's Dennis Herrera or Ed Lee. It doesn't become Dennis Herrera or David Chu or the other candidates. And so I think, you know, from my sense, this really sorts out well, this ranked choice balloting for the incumbent mayor.
I think, though, you also have to look at, well, name ID is key for how people vote. I think there are a bunch of different issues why people cast their ballots in San Francisco. One is the ethnic identity, gay identity. Are you pro-bike? I mean, people go really big after that, pro-transit
dogs,
first.
Dogs is
yeah,
critical.
Dog is a big one. You can go down the list of them. Are you for or against the parks bringing in private partners for fees? There are a host of issues where you're going to see the candidates separate themselves, and there might be where Bevin Dufty, because he's gay, is going to get the number one gay vote, and Dennis Herrera, because he champions same-sex marriage, is going to get the second place vote. So you're going to see breaking down
the rank voting system only will accrue to the benefits of some of the other candidates if they have a kind of agreement among themselves, right? To say anybody but Ed Lee, to sort of say we're all going to put each other down or encourage our supporters to put each other down as second and third and not have Ed Lee be a second or third choice. Yeah?
If somebody's well ahead. Now, what we saw in Oakland was that Don Prado was well ahead. And that's the only example we have of somebody who was well ahead who ultimately did not win.
Right.
And that was because there was a concerted anybody but Prado vote that was in part coordinated by the candidates. But as Rachel said, you're going to have newspaper endorsements, you're going to have political endorsements of all types. And so the campaigns don't necessarily need to coordinate in that way.
Back to our calls. Anna in San Francisco joins us next. Anna, go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm just a young voter. And, you know, Ed Lee, I think, you know, he's been working well in Civic Center so far. But, you know, at the same time, if you look at someone like Obama, he made a lot of promises, but it's kind of Congress who's kind of stonewalled him. And I think that's kind of a valuable thing to look at.
So, Anna, doesn't bother you that Ed Lee has changed his mind? It won't affect how you vote?
Well, I think, you know, what you were saying about how politicians, they just kind of like, I'm used to a lie and I'm used to them kind of like giving empty promises because like a lot of times it's not necessarily their fault.
Okay.
It's something else that kind of gets in their way because, you know, based on how the government actually works, they can't literally get a lot done. They can propose things, but they can't really carry them out necessarily.
Anna, thanks. Thanks for the call and the observation. Some other people writing in on that same point. One of our listeners writes in, broke his promise is a lame complaint used when things come out different from what people expected. Ed Lee knocked heads and put together policies that were hard sells as the interim mayor. A lot of people wanted more of that effectiveness, and they've prevailed in asking him to continue in that vein of effectiveness. Faye writes in, did Willie and Rose backroom deal to get Ed in office as a placeholder mayor, knowing they would engineer a run for mayor? So this gets at the sort of when, who knew what when, Rachel Gordon. You were wondering about that earlier. I mean, do you think there's sort of been a plan all along by the Rose Packs and Willie Browns of the world that we'll get him in as interim and then?
I think there was probably a plan by Rose Pack to do that. In fact, she was pretty upfront about it, saying that she wanted him to run from the get-go. Willie Brown was very supportive as well. Now, the question is when did Ed Lee decide that he wanted to run for mayor? He said in the story by my colleague John Cote today that he made the decision. It was really put him over the top when he ran into Senator Dianne Feinstein outside of the White House when the Giants were there visiting. And she said, Ed, we really need you to run the city. She was in a similar position as well as being an interim mayor before running in her own right. Now, whether he's using the popularity of Dianne Feinstein to make his argument, whether he decided before or if after he talked to his family over the weekend, that's only for Ed Lee to know at this time, unless he has a diary that he's going to share with us at some point.
And will that in turn, Corey Cook, be kind of the substance of the opposition, that Ed Lee is a creature of Willie Brown, Rose Pack, and Dianne Feinstein?
I think absolutely. Less Feinstein, because I think she's more popular in San Francisco than Willie Brown is today. But you know, I think I don't know as Ed Lee was well served by the last month or so with all the speculation, because he's been pretty quiet and has been sort of rolling back his language quite a bit on whether he would run or not. But without really explaining publicly what he was thinking or why, I think there have been a lot of different narratives that have sprung up, including one that involves Willie Brown and Rose Pack, including a whole variety of other ones about why he's getting into the race. And so I think he has to be very clear and convincing about why he's running. You know, I'm from Oakland, and so I was very excited when voters drafted Ron Dellums to run, and he insisted he wasn't interested in running, and people basically got behind him and got him to run. It turned out he wasn't really interested in being mayor. And so I think one of the things that one of the questions I think people have to ask him is, you know, if you weren't interested in running for the last, you know, 8 months, what convinced you, and are you really in it? Because we just experienced what happens when you have a mayor who's not really into it.
Yeah. What's your sense of that, Rachel, as someone who covers City Hall? I mean, has he just really loved being mayor?
As I said at the beginning of the hour, I've really seen him grow into the role. Yeah. I mean, he, from being kind of reticent, someone who had been a long time kind of behind the scenes administrator, not just as city administrator, but as head of public works, as a city purchaser, Human Rights Commission. He's always had these behind the scenes jobs, and suddenly he got to be out front. He got to be the one setting the policy. He seemed to enjoy it. He grew into it, more comfortable with it. Maybe he was kind of set free. I think there are a lot of us who think sometimes that if only we were in charge, we could do something differently. Of course, to my editors at the Chronicle, I don't feel that way. But I think that he did kind of like the role and the power that came with it. And I think there were a lot of people who were behind him saying, you know what, you're doing a pretty good job. Now, that's what it looks like now, but he really is going to be scrutinized much more to see whether the role he was doing was a good role this time.
Back to our calls. Let's go next to Buck, who joins us. Buck, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I've worked on progressive causes with Ed Lee since 76 and 77 when we sat in together to stop the eviction at the I Hotel.
Ah.
This idea that he's Rose Pack or Willie Brown's toy is complete baloney. He's been his own politician for decades. And, you know, just the fact that Willie Brown and Rose Pack back him doesn't mean he's bad. Rose Pack and Willie Brown back the best mayor we've had in the last 40 years. Art Agnos. I think this is a canard. I think he's been his man for a long time. I think people are going to see an incredible upswelling of people, especially progressive voters like myself, that are going to be glad to see somebody like him be mayor.
Buck, thanks. Thanks for calling and adding your point of view to that interesting endorsement from someone on the progressive side of the ledger. Let's hear next from Phil, who joins us with a different point of view about Ed Lee. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, one of your guests said that some of the politicians promise things and they're broken, but a lot of them have obstacles in their way. They need to keep it. Ed Lee doesn't have these obstacles. He lied from the very beginning before he even got into office. That bugs me. Although I like the guy. If he would have waited 4 years, I would have voted for him. But he's lying right from the beginning. That bugs me.
Okay, Phil, thanks. Thanks for adding that in. This gets back to the original point, I guess, we discussed, and we just don't know that. How many people will react like Phil? How many will react like Buck in terms of how bothered they are by that fundamental change in his point of view?
Right. I mean, Corey kept saying we're going to have to listen to Ed Lee over the next days and weeks to see what his explanation is and whether it's going to be a strong one. Now, his comments in this morning's Chronicle were that the city needs him. When I read that, I went as a citizen of San Francisco, I was going like, wow, does the city really need you? Do we like the way you've been doing your job or not? It's a fine line he's going to be walking now to see how he plays out.
What do you think will happen at the debate tonight, Corey Cook? What do you think is going to go on? What the dynamic will be like? What kind of questions will he have to contend with?
Well, the debates are interesting in part because the candidates are looking at second place votes, and so I think it'll be interesting to see how they treat him. On the one hand, I think, you know, David Chu, as you heard earlier, is walking this fine line between, you know, I embrace him because we've worked effectively. I think, but you know, by most objective measures, this has been a pretty effective time for the city in terms of the mayor's relationship with the Board of Supervisors, and so on the one hand, he's going to, I think, be very much challenging Ed Lee, saying, you know, what's going on? Yes, I think the caller was exactly right. He has very strong progressive credentials. On the other hand, the last, you know, few months have been dominated by Rose Pack and Willie Brown. And so what do we make of all of this? And there are all these questions that are swirling. On the other hand, these candidates can't afford to alienate voters who might otherwise list them as second, third choices.
Do you know the format tonight? I mean, they're going to be all 35 candidates on stage at the Castro.
Top 9 or 10 candidates.
Yeah, that's the usual, 9 or 10.
some of our emails coming in. Richard writes in, as a San Francisco voter, I'm surprised that people are surprised. Was there anyone who thought Ed Lee wasn't going to be running? I've been assuming that he was going to be in the race unless he performed spectacularly badly, which he does not appear to have done. And Eugene writes in, why was Mr. Lee ever asked to promise that he would not run? Always seemed like a strange request. That was key, though. Was it not, Rachel Gordon, to his getting the job in the first place from the six members of the Board of Supervisors who voted for him?
Right. So we have to remember very quickly of how this works, is that once Gavin Newsom won the lieutenant governor's race, there was a year left to serve out his term. And there's the Board of Supervisors, not the electorate, that decided who was going to fill out the term. And so he needed six votes on the Board of Supervisors. And part of that is a lot of people were looking for what they called a caretaker mayor. There were three people who were really in the mix, maybe four with Art Agnew. So it was the head of the PUC, Ed Harrington, Sheriff Mike Hennessy, and then City Administrator Ed Lee and Art Agnew, all of whom said we didn't want to run again. The idea was the supervisors didn't really want to give the platform power of incumbency to whomever that was going to be. They really thought that whoever the next mayor was should be the decision of the voters and not them. Ed Lee came in saying he was going to be that caretaker mayor. He also said that because he wasn't running, he was going to be free. There weren't going to be the constraints because there weren't going to be political considerations in any of the decisions he made. But that was one promise that they extracted from whoever that was going to be. And again, it was a promise made to the 11 members of the Board of Supervisors, not to the citizens of San Francisco.
And also the city ethics codes say that if you are in elective office, you can't then go back to being in the administration. So the city administrator, part of what he got to be acting mayor was an agreement that he could go back to his old job after somebody else, with a caveat, though,
and that caveat that the Board of Supervisors said is you cannot go back. You can go back to your old job as city administrator as long as you decide not to run for the job. So now that's off the table. If he loses this race for mayor, there's no guarantee whatsoever. In fact, he'd have to get special legislation that he could go back to his old job.
Speaking of the Ethics Commission, there's another kind of interesting thing that bubbled up over the weekend, which is that the director of the Ethics Commission, John St. Croix, said that in his judgment, people who have participated in the Progress for All committee, the committee that was urging Ed Lee to run, can now play no role in Ed Lee's mayoral campaign. So you have apparently a group of people, both volunteers and people who are perhaps paid as staffers on the Progress for All committee, who are now ineligible to participate. What do you make of that?
I think that might be subject of litigation, I think, to say that someone can't run work on a campaign, particularly a volunteer. But that's something that the Ethics Commission is going to be taking up this evening, Monday night. That was just a recommendation by the head of the Ethics Commission. There are a lot of questions swirling by the role of this campaign, Progress for All. There have been requests to open investigations by the U.S. Attorney's Office and by the District Attorney's Office, as well as the Ethics Commission, to see whether any campaign laws were violated in terms of whether there was a real separation between Ed Lee's candidacy and this committee that was supposed to be independent.
We still have time to squeeze in a few calls. If you want to get in a question to either Corey Cook or Rachel Gordon, 866-733-6786 is the number. And to Ken in San Francisco. Ken, go ahead.
Yeah, about that Ethics Commission investigation that began looking at the Run, Ed, Run and Progress for All campaign groups. Last week, the mayor's spokesperson Christine Falvey said, quote, Mayor Ed Lee has no involvement in Run Ed Run campaign, and he doesn't know who the funders are. Well, this seems incredible given his frequent meetings with Rose and Willie. What do they discuss? Knitting techniques? I mean, Ed's claim that he doesn't know whose money's in his own hat, it's as believable as Rose Pack's statement that she's never heard of Recology, Sunset Scavenger. I mean, so do we already have a couple of lies here, big ones going on?
Ken, thanks. Rachel or Corey?
Ed Lee has said, I mean, I think the caller raises some good points. Ed Lee said he was aware of this campaign to get him to run, to urge him to run, but he wasn't pulling any strings to make it happen. That's something for the Ethics Commission and others to determine. the caller's right that he has frequent meetings or at least dinners with Rose Pack and Willie Brown, if you're to believe what they say? What did they discuss? Was it kind of going down to the nitty-gritty of what it would be for him to get into the race? A lot of questions out there that have to be answered.
And we're in a really bizarre area of campaign finance law, which is this distinction between a candidate campaign and an independent campaign. And this was an independent expenditure campaign on behalf of somebody who wasn't a candidate, which raises a whole series of other questions about what can you do, what can't you do, and then what happens when ultimately that candidate gets in the race.
Yeah, interesting, because there is supposed to be that separation, but if this was an independent expenditure campaign for a non-candidate, then what?
Well, the argument from the beginning was it couldn't have been coordinated because he's not a candidate.
Right.
So there's clearly no, on its face, there can't be a problem because this guy's not running for office. Now that he is, I tend to share Rachel's concern that the ethics statement was a little bit strongly worded and maybe not viable, but I think it throws into question how it is that when you have this draft someone campaign, they get in, then what happens?
Last email I want to read from Keith, who writes in, if the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, officials, and other candidates were willing to work with Ed Lee and get things done just because he was not running for mayor, and now they're upset that they did, then I think we have to take a look at those other officials' credibility and ability to represent the people. That's sort of the dilemma, right, for David Chu in particular, is he can't suddenly say, well, never mind all those things that I did with Ed Lee.
Right. I don't think you're going to see a difference with David Chu and Ed Lee on policy, or at least major differences. You're going to see, again, using those words that David Chu used, trust and confidence. And that's where he's going to try to differentiate himself from the mayor.
Just have a moment, last thoughts from each of you on sort of what you're going to be watching as this fascinating race now unfolds over the next 3 months.
I mean, I think like everybody, we're going to be watching Ed Lee and see what he says and how he explains how he got from that point to this point. I think to get back to that email, I think the ultimately the power of the mayor resides largely in his or her ability to persuade other people, and that's largely rests on their on the trust that other people have in them. And so, on the one hand, it is difficult for these candidates to say, I liked him before, but I don't like him so much now. On the other hand, mayors don't have unlimited powers here, and part of their ability to get things done is that their word can be trusted. And so I think, he's got a lot of work to do, not just in terms of the public. I mean, certainly he's the front runner. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think it's his race to lose. But at the same time, I think he has to give pretty clear and convincing explanations, not just to the public, but to the Board of Supervisors and others, that if he wins, he can actually work effectively with
Rachel,
them.
What are you going to keep an eye on?
I think right now that Ed Lee definitely is controlling the reins of this race, but I think we're going to have to watch to see whether any candidates try to break out other ways with any kind of big, profound announcements about policy in San Francisco so they can take control of the race.
Rachel Gordon, City Hall reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Rachel, thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
And Corey Cook, Assistant Professor of Politics and Director of the Leo McCarthy Center for Public Service and the Common Good at the University of San Francisco. Corey, thanks for being with
us. Thank
you
very much.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Paul Ancour is our engineer today, and Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, in for Michael Krasny. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.